Hi, I'm Natalie.
I'm Lena.
And I'm Sean. We are three friends who all love film and thought it would be cool to discuss movies from our perspective.
We rate movies in terms of how drunk you need to be to enjoy them. We call it the Martini Scale.
You know what I just realized?
What?
Tenet is a palindrome.
Yeah. Did you not know that?
What?
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that's the intro.
Yeah. That's a great intro.
I think that we just start with the confusion because this is 2020 and this is the most. I just want actually the my thesis for this episode is going to be this is the most 2020 movie of 2020.
Very good.
That is good.
Okay.
Yep. I like it.
Yeah. So today we are discussing Tenet, and Lena, I think that maybe you should read the intro for this movie.
Oh.
Why me?
Lena, the big job.
I know. Good thing I have not been drinking.
Because I'm trying to do things a little backward in this episode. I have kind of some plans for this episode, but I do think we need to start with an intro.
Okay.
Should I read backwards?
I mean, listen, if you want
to. Or should I start in the middle, then go to the beginning, then to the end, then back to the middle?
You know what? Yeah, if you're describing the plot, if you're describing the plot, I don't think it would really matter, would it?
No. Okay. Anyways, Tenet is a 2020 action thriller and science fiction film written and directed by Christopher Nolan, who produced it with Emma Thomas, his wife, a co-production between the United Kingdom and United States. It stars John David Washington, Robert Pattinson, Elizabeth Debicki, Dimple Kapadia, Michael Caine, and Kenneth Branagh. I can't believe they didn't say
it. You just asked her to read it so that you didn't have to pronounce these names.
I know.
What a
All of them are easy except the Dimple guy. Is that the guy from yesterday?
Oh, I don't know.
Anyways, why don't they have Aaron's name on here? Rude. The plot follows a secret agent, Washington, as he manipulates the flow of time to prevent World War III. Nolan took more than 5 years to write the screenplay after deliberating about Tenet's central ideas for over a decade. No kidding. Pre-production began in the late 2018, casting in March of 2019, and principal photography lasted 3 months in Denmark, Estonia, India, Italy, Norway, the UK, and the US from May to November. Cinematographer Hoyt van Hoytema. Wow.
So are you just, I have a question. Are you just going to like read the whole Wikipedia page or what's going on here?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Keep going.
Yep. Scenes of time manipulation were filmed both backwards and forwards. Upwards of 100 vessels and thousands of extras were used. I mean, this movie is massive. Anyways, it was delayed 3 times because of COVID. And Tenet was released in the UK on August 26th and United States on September 3rd in IMAX, which I don't think a lot of people saw in that. It was the first Hollywood tentpole to open in theaters after the pandemic shut down and has grossed $353 million worldwide, still in a pandemic.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
That is pretty crazy. What was the budget? Do we know?
Yes, I have it here. $205 million.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So minus marketing, obviously, it's probably made some of its recouped of its investment.
Close,
it's interesting.
I guess.
Natalie's like, I don't think so.
What do you think? No.
No.
I mean, maybe marketing. I'm curious like how this like release was this weekend where people can purchase it on iTunes, like how much money they're making off of that.
Wasn't projected to be like a $1 billion movie?
Probably, but I think it's just like, obviously we've talked about in the past where films have had to market themselves several times. So it's like, it's additional cost every time they're doing that. And if this has been delayed 3 times, that's
a lot of
marketing
money.
Costs each time.
I think that we need to talk about this very special martini that Natalie has created tonight, because this, if you're going to have to look at our social, because what you've done for this martini is quite astounding. So please check it out on Instagram, because I'm sure you're going to describe it and it's going to be lovely, but I've seen the video that you made and nothing will do it justice without that context.
I mean, it's really all about the visual experience yes. of this martini.
Totally.
And it is an inverted martini specifically for this movie. And it's the Inatram martini. So that in itself is the palindrome. That is a Inatram martini. Go backwards.
Is that martini Inatram spelled martini. Backwards?
It is. But okay. then I have martini at the end. So it goes back and forth both ways.
Inatram?
In a tram.
Okay, in a tram. Okay, got it. I like
it. I mean, we can pronounce it however we want. I know.
We should put like a fancy accent over the A and make it like super fancy.
Okay.
But you know, you
do it. So how do you want to say it?
I think we should call it Inatram.
Ooh. Ooh. Okay.
You like that?
Mm-hmm. Fancy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Listen, I try to be fancy.
It's definitely fancier than in a tram.
It sounds like you're in a tram.
It does.
But and that's... That's exactly how I'm reading it.
No,
and,
okay.
And me being really not classy, I went with Inatram.
Inatram.
Inatram. Inatram.
Inatram. I like that. But that's not right. Inatram. I don't fucking know.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm dyslexic enough as it is. This isn't working for me.
Inatram it is, you guys.
Inatram.
Inatram. Okay. Sounds good. So I've been kind of holding off on this particular conversation, but I feel like this is kind of the movie to have this conversation about because we all thought this movie was coming out like earlier this year and it was delayed like 1,000 times in COVID and all this bullshit, right? And in the meantime, HBO Max has announced probably the biggest news to come out of Hollywood this year that they're going to be over 2021 releasing all of their films on their HBO Max platform to coincide with the theatrical release. And I just want to go on record and say that I predicted this earlier this year.
I said,
this is what's going to happen. This is going to be the future. And so there's a couple of layers to this that I want to kind of have a quick conversation about because I think that this is really compelling. And I think that this is going to be like the moment that the industry made a shift that there's like no going back from. So I want to get your thoughts on this, but I want to preface this by saying that I do believe that there will of course be some demand to return to the theatrical experience, right? Because it's, you know, we're going to be pent up and we're going to want to go back and have normal lives again and whatever. And of course, I think that's going to mean we're going to go back and sit in, you know, dark movie theaters with hundreds of strangers again. But I personally think that there will need to be some innovation around that because I think that a lot of people in this time throughout this year have got like nicer home theater setups, right? They've maybe bought nicer TVs, you know, sound systems, whatever. And you were not going to go back to like the shitty movie theater, sticky floors, shitty popcorn. Like they're going to have to kind of like heighten that experience a bit. Even a place like Arclight, I feel like has gone downhill over the years, right? Like Arclight used to be in Los Angeles, at least kind of like the premium, you know, movie going experience. And
yeah,
I don't think that it's been that for at least a couple of years. I know that AMC offered like the A-list program where you could get like kind of like unlimited movies for a certain amount every month. But I think that they're going to have to kind of revolutionize the movie going experience to bring people back. And I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts on all of this.
I mean, I will say, like, I think it was something that we were paying attention to for a long time, how we wanted to experience a movie and what theater we wanted to see it in. And, you know, we were all AMC first class and, you know, would regularly choose, you know, Century City because they had the Dolby Theater or they had the Prime Theater.
Yeah.
And knowing that that was a better visual sound experience to enjoy the movie, the very comfortable like lounged leather recliners, that makes it more of an experience rather than going into a theater with a screen that hasn't been updated, sound that is dull and, you know, turned down, and you're around a bunch of people that are like talking and not paying attention and texting or whatever. When it's that experience, yes, you might as well just watch it at home.
Yeah.
But I do have, again, not the person have, you know, my finger on the pulse of where things are moving forward. That's never been who I am. So I don't accurately judge where the industry is moving, which is not a good, you know, place to be in when you work in the industry. It would be great if I had a better, you know, instinctual aspect of like knowing where, you know, prediction of where we're going to go. To me, I know how I enjoy movies and the experience consumers have when you're left to your own devices to watch a film, how you take that movie and that experience versus kind of being forced into a theater where you have to sit and watch this movie for 2 hours. Yeah. And I think this movie being such a perfect example of us being aware of like, we want to create a good environment to watch this movie in. And, you know, we like up, you know, thanks to you, we've updated our television, our sound system. We, you know, I moved the speakers in the right places so that I would be ready for this movie. Everything was for this movie. And I think I'm more attentive to that detail than a lot of people are.
Yeah.
I still started this movie and within 30 seconds was like, oh, I forgot to refill my drink and got up. And it's like, I know that like other people, I went to the bathroom and didn't pause the movie and I had the ability to do so. Like I thought of like somebody that I saw on screen. I was like, where has that person been? And so I looked him up on IMDb on my phone and then I got distracted by a text message I had missed. And it's like, you have the comfort of your home to then be distracted from the movie. And then I'm like, wait, what the fuck is this movie about? Yeah. And I'm not enjoying the movie as much because I'm not as immersed in the movie.
Interesting.
Well, you do that a lot
on your phone. You're constantly watching videos of other like fucking Instagram shit. And I'm like, we're watching a movie. What are you listening to? Anyways, I mean, for me, I'm just like, I agree with the experience and when going back. And I think that theaters, me personally, should be taking the time to de-grime and upgrade their theaters. You know, I'm loved the AMC A-list because, and Century City, because I liked the Prime one where it was like the nice leather seat that's nicely spaced away from people. They're leather. They're not that dingy, grimy, carpety, like thing where everyone's farting on it and it smells like shit. Like, it's just, I don't like the shitty theater aspect anymore. Like, it really, you know, made me fancy. I'm like, I'd rather wait till it comes out in this, or I'll go at a certain time that's not, you know, easy for me because I'd rather see it in the Prime Theater because it sounds better, it looks better, it feels better. Yeah. And I think that all of these like podunk like theaters need to like take the time. Like right now, no one's in your theater, like upgrade it. Yeah. I know you're losing money, but in the end, when people come back, they're going to be happy.
I mean, I don't personally think that just nicer chairs are the solution here. Like, I feel like maybe there's innovation.
There's other things, but I think
ways they can upgrade it. I mean, yeah. I see your point. Like the Prime,
like maybe they can have pods where like you have your friends can buy a certain section and you don't have to be climbed in with everybody.
There you go. I like this. I like that Lena's thinking innovatively. I don't know. I think it would be really interesting if a company like Amazon or Apple came along and kind of like, you know, revolutionized the experience that is going
to Amazon has the money to do it.
Well, they both do. And they're both getting into the film industry more, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I think that there's something really interesting. And I want to say that Kara Swisher, I sent you guys a podcast that I recommend you guys and anyone else listening.
We listen to it.
I'll put in the show notes. But Kara Swisher, who's one of my favorite podcasters, she interviewed the CEO from Time Warner, I believe. Mm-hmm. And basically like the week that this was announced, and he had a really like, I don't know, he had a really good perspective on why he did this. And
I don't disagree with his perspective at all as to why he did this. I think that this is so important to, I think, protect, you know, I think citizens and making sure people aren't going out and providing entertainment that they would normally go out and sit in a space, an enclosed space with a bunch of other people. So I think it is kind of, and that's, I appreciated that he's like, this is the mandate for 2021 because we want to make sure that we're giving product to consumers that they'll enjoy in a way that they can consume safely.
Yeah.
And he said, that doesn't, this is just for 2021. He's like, I will have a better answer for you in 11 months from now as to what 2022 and the future will look like. That doesn't necessarily mean those, you know, windows of when movies are in theaters to on streaming platforms are completely closed forever. It is for them for 2021, you know? Yeah. Well, and I think that's an important step for next year to kind of keep people at home.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I also think that if this works, and I'm assuming it's going to work because you've already seen, like with the announcement of like Wonder Woman, for example, that HBO has already increased their subscriber base. And so I think this is going to work. And I think that this will be, I think he took the leap. And I think that this is how it will be going forward. And you will have a choice as a consumer of, do I want to watch this at home or do I want to watch this in a theater? And I think there will always be people like us who, God willing, get to go back to the movie theater, right? And have this experience because we love that. We love that experience. But there's people that don't love that experience. There's people that are perfectly fine watching this in their homes. And
the movie, and the youngins are growing up watching everything on their phone. So
totally, what do they know totally.
About the theater and experience anyways.
I also just think that, like, I don't know. If you think about it from a marketing perspective, they have a marketing budget for a movie, right? And they typically right now they have to divide that up between theatrical and then the on-demand releases, right? Mm-hmm. What if they are able to put all of that money into one bucket now and just promote it? They're just promoting the film. So when you see someone on, you know, late night television, or when you see, you know, the billboards on Sunset Boulevard or whatever, that's the marketing push for the film. And that is where the film makes its money. And I understand that there's like back-end deals and all this other shit, but guess what? Like the film industry it has not evolved much over the years. It really hasn't. And I think that this is a time when they have this opportunity to really innovate around this. And what does the future of movie going look like? And it's been accelerated. It's going to look like this going forward. And if you have a back-end deal that you're pissed off about, well, you'll have to figure that out when the next time you sign a contract, right?
Like, make a new deal.
I've seen like Christopher Nolan say that he's pissed about, you know, this experience or whatever. And well, you know what, Chris, we're giving you some free promotion today for your troubles. But I just feel that like, it's one of those things where it's like, you have to get on with the times, you know, and the times are saying, pandemic or not, this is going to be the future, I think. And I think that these people in the industry are just going to have to suck it up and figure out a way to move forward. It's not like they're not going to make money from this. There's going to be new and innovative ways to make money. They're just going to have to figure out what that looks like.
Yeah. And I think that's more of the perspective of the filmmakers that are upset with HBO Max, is that that decision was made without consideration of how they are making their money, because all of these productions and deals have already been done under the idea that they're making their money off of back end points. So people take less money up front so that they can have part ownership and part of the waterfall that is going to be if the movie is successful, you know, and now the only people that are seeing that money is potentially going to be the studio and subscription fees, you know, and none of the talent is seeing that money. That's one thing to have a plan to release movies that way, and you're building your contracts and paying your talent accordingly, knowing that that's how that's going to be. But all of these projects weren't done that way. And so this decision was made. The only movie that was considered was Wonder Woman, where they paid Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot ahead of time. They paid them, I don't know how much, but basically, you know, in a certain amount to make them feel better that this is how the movie is going to be released, but they didn't do that with anybody else. So
here's the thing. I am very empathetic to these people who make millions of dollars and have to renegotiate their contracts. What I will say is that another podcast.
I completely agree with you too. They totally. All, it's like Christopher Nolan, like you're really upset. Like you're not, you didn't already make a ton of money on this movie. Like, come on. You
know, that's the thing though. It's not like they're like, it's not like the production, you know, PA assistants had back-end deals on movies, right?
So I get it.
The people who are making the shit ton of money from these films regardless are like five people that get back in deals that are worth something, right? Mm-hmm. And another podcast that I was listening to the other day was talking about this very thing. And it was like, oh, well, let's shed some tears for the back in deals. But it's like, no, it's the people that actually see money from the back in deals are actually like very few people that actually work on a film.
Yeah.
It's like maybe the director, well, it's maybe some of the producers, and maybe if they're lucky and they have enough clout, some of the actors. But most actors don't even make money on back in deals unless you're Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt. So yeah. I just feel that, like, again, they'll figure it out, right? No one's going to lose their house. Like, they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not trying to sound insensitive, because I understand that these people worked really hard to get where they are in their careers. But at the same time, like, again, there has not been any innovation in this space in a very long time. And this is almost like forced innovation in a way.
Yeah.
And I think,
go ahead.
Well, no, I just think at the end of the day, the consumer is going to be the winner. Like, the movie going public, us, are going to win from this, because we're going to have the choice of how we want to watch the content. In some cases, we'll get to watch it sooner. Like, I think of personally, like when Call Me By Your Name came out is a perfect example of this. I probably spent hundreds of dollars watching that movie in the theater because I kept going to see it. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have been able to watch that from the comfort of my own home after watching it in the theater for the first time, because mm-hmm. I loved having that experience in a theater, but I also loved to watch it again and again. Mm-hmm. And I just think that now, to your point, like, kids are on their phones. Like, people want to watch movies how they want to watch movies. And the three of us will love to go to the theater again, because that's, we love that experience. But I might also want to come home and watch it again because I love the movie so much, mm-hmm. you know? And like,
I think I'm so glad you brought up Call Me By Your Name. Shockingly, the first time I'll ever say that, and probably the last time. But I think that this is a perfect example of like what people are a little bit afraid in this new model is, that's exactly the film. Well, let's, like, Avengers aside, like, and back end for Christopher Nolan and all of these big movies and Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot for Wonder Woman, like, give me a fucking break. It's back end in independent type movies like that, where it's like, when you have a case of like word of mouth that is like allowing this movie to have the legs that Call Me By Your Name did, if it's kind of released on a platform and nobody ever watches it and like they don't continue to put marketing behind it, then it just kind of fades away.
I'm going to stop you.
As far as like the back end, as far as like that money is going into Luca's pocket, it's going into Army's pocket, it's going into Timothy's pocket, which I'm sure they did not get paid barely anything to make this movie. And they should get paid.
Do you think Army Hammer and Timothy Chalamet had back-end deals on Call Me By Your Name?
Yes.
I highly doubt that. I would love to see that contract. Okay, well.
Every like movie, like most people do, we had back-end deals on Fear Inc. It's like, if this becomes a Paranormal Activity or anything like that, the actors who came aboard and didn't get paid that much should get rewarded at some point. We shouldn't be raking in millions and millions and millions of dollars while we didn't pay people a ton of freaking money.
I don't disagree with you, but
the point is to share that.
Here's, I guess, the counterpoint that I have to your argument, in the sense that, again, let's use Call Me By Your Name as an example. I can't tell you how many people I recommended that movie to over the course of its, mm-hmm. you know, time. And I still do. If I meet somebody new and they're like, what's your favorite movie? I'm like, here it goes. I don't think any of those people watched it in the theater. I think all of them watched it. Either they bought it on iTunes, they rented it, they watched it on whatever streaming service it exists on now. Like, I couldn't tell you a single person that actually I recommended, other than like my immediate social circle, that I like insisted they watch mm-hmm. it, and probably because I took them and bought their ticket. But mm-hmm. most people did not watch that in a theater. And so I just think that, like, again, it's one of those things where if I go to a movie, or if I watch something on HBO Max right now and I tell you about it, there's a much better chance that you're going to go watch it tonight or tomorrow or this weekend because it's on and it's accessible to you, than you don't necessarily want to go see it in a theater. You don't, 6 months from now, you're not going to remember that I told you about it. And so I don't know. I mean, listen, I think we both probably have valid points here, and I understand, you know, the points that you're making about, like, I think Fear Inc. is probably the best example, right? If you guys gave people back-end points on that deal and you said, hey, as this gets wider distribution and, you know, is exposed to a wider audience, we want to make sure that the people that weren't necessarily compensated, you know, millions of dollars for this indie film get the opportunity to, you know, profit from any exposure that it gets. I totally get that from an indie
perspective. None of us should be making so much money while other people are not. Like, especially like people that really put in some dedication and hard work to it. That's just, not fair. And I don't think that that's normally really how it's done that often. And then I want to tell one story quickly about the enjoyability of a film in theater versus like at home, even when you're trying to create a good environment. And I've told this story a lot and I apologize to my family. But I was visiting family up in Santa Cruz a few years back. And, you know, there was a good group of us, like 10 people. And it was right around Oscar season. And they were like, oh, what should we watch? And they were kind of listing off movies and they mentioned I, Tonya. None of them had seen it. And I had already seen it. Good. Like, this is not like some like on my top 10 list, but I really enjoyed this movie. And I thought Allison Janney's performance in it was great. Sebastian Stan was amazing. And obviously Margot Robbie was great. So we turn on this movie and I'm sitting in the very back of the living room and I have a view of the rest of my family and extended family watching this movie. And people are chatting and they're fussing with the baby and they're going to make popcorn and the movie's playing the whole time. And just, I'm watching this for 2 hours as like barely anybody's paying attention and the movie's over and I'm seething with anger because I know how good this movie is. And this is before the Oscars. And I'm like, and I know Allison Janney's performance was like stunning in this thing. And I was like, what did you guys think? And they were like, it was okay. I didn't really like it that much. And I'm like, because you weren't paying attention. Like, it was so frustrating. And it's like in a theater, it's a much more controlled environment. I think the consumer actually enjoys the film more when they're forced to like let everything else go and just watch the movie.
Well, I also think
that that's the kind of movie that a movie person wants to watch. Yeah. People that aren't movie people, that's a like not a fun movie to watch. It's not interesting enough.
I would also have
explosions and a car chase and like something to keep your attention. Like, it's true though. It's like older people, they're not going to like, that's going to take a lot of energy for them to really pay attention to it.
I would also say that I'm assuming that I know Christopher Nolan again is worried about his money, but I'm assuming that he's also worried about compromising that experience that you speak to, right? Because you said yourself that, you know, you got a text message and Lena just added you and said you're watching Instagram videos while this was on. And I think for me personally, like because I love film and I appreciate film so much, like when I was watching Tenet this week, I actually like, I put my phone like on the charger in the kitchen and watch the movie. I wasn't distracted by, you know, any other screens. I was focused on this.
But did you do it in two sittings?
What do you mean?
You said you needed to finish it the next day.
Oh, well, yes, because so
that's again not like the perfect situation. That's what I'm saying. We are people who care about that kind of stuff.
Hold on.
And we'll intentionally try and create the best environment and we still get caught.
Okay. I didn't get to finish though. Hold on. So thank you for outing me, Natalie. I love being called out just as much as you do. So I'm going to be really honest with you and tell you that I was really excited for this movie, right? I even suggested we do like a watch party and I don't think that worked out, but whatever. I started this movie at like 9:05 on Monday night when it was released on iTunes. Mm-hmm. And I may or may not have taken an edible. And I may or may not have had a really long day. I may or may not have had a couple old fashions. And I actually started to get really tired. And so I made a conscious decision about 40 minutes into this that I was really enjoying the experience. And I wanted to intentionally stop it and go to bed because I did not want my experience to be compromised. So I stopped it and then I just restarted it entirely the next day. I don't do that for all movies. Like I admit that, right? There's movies that I'm like, oh, I'll turn it off and watch the rest of it tomorrow. This was not that. I watched it. I've actually watched it a third time or second and a half time because I wanted to go back and take some notes for this episode. So anyway, long story short, I was very intentional with this episode, with this movie, because I wanted to appreciate it. I think subconsciously, I probably bought my new TV and Sonos soundbar for this movie this year. So I wanted to give it the appreciation that it deserves.
Mm-hmm. And boy, did it
get that soundbar and that sound system.
Oh yeah.
I think we rattled our entire apartment complex.
With the exception of the dialogue, but we'll get into that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I think just to wrap up the conversation, I'm really happy that HBO Max made this decision. I'm really looking forward to, especially for us, this gives us like so many options of things we get to talk about next year, right? And I think the cool thing is that we can talk about a movie and someone can literally, after listening to this episode or before listening to this episode, watch it in their living room. And I think that for us, that's going to be really cool in 2021. So
I think so too. I'm equally excited as I am devastated, which fits into most of my 2020 and my mental state of not really knowing how I feel.
Touche.
All right, let's do some trivia that is obvious or not obvious. We went over earlier the budget, huge budget for an original movie, making it one of the most expensive original movies of all time. Studio gave him $205 million to work with. Yikes. Crazy. In some situations, the actor actually had to learn the reverse of the choreography, which I think it seemed pretty obvious.
Yes.
And even learn how to speak their lines backwards. Kenneth Branagh, in particular, had to learn to speak his lines backwards in a Russian accent.
Oh my God.
That's pretty interesting that he did that. I thought he was great, but... Nolan opted to have his movie be entirely reliant upon real effects, refusing to use any green screens in production of the movie. But he usually does practical anyways, and sometimes he uses like miniatures to like capture his scene, which Natalie and I were looking at something about that earlier.
Huh.
But he realized it would be a lot cheaper to just buy a disused plane and actually crash it in real life instead of creating the miniature.
So, I figured it looked too real for it not to be completely real.
Yeah. But it's not the first time. He actually demolished a plane in The Dark Knight Rises. So
I don't remember.
This is in the opening where Bane staged a mid-air escape.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I do. I remember that. I love that movie.
Oh, yes. That one.
That one. Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking Dark Knight. I wasn't thinking.
Yeah. Dark Knight Rises.
That movie I don't know as well, except for the fake people fighting themselves in the background.
Was that Rises?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that's why I can never find it in the Dark Knight. It's really great. I always get that confused. I love that. And the last trivia is the working title for this was Merry-Go-Round.
Oh.
That's reflected in the plot.
God, I'm so glad we barely did not go with that title.
That's all. And obviously it's a palindrome, and it actually originally its release date, well, I guess trivia. Its release date was supposed to be 7/17, which is 717, which is backwards 717.
Okay.
2020. And it was also intended to be released on the 10th anniversary plus one day of Inception's release.
Wow. Oh, nice. Has it been that long since Inception? My God.
Which there, I have a theory about that.
Oh, can't wait to hear it. So per usual, I have gone to our friends at Letterboxd and I found some reviews from people that I thought would be fun to read before we talk about our own reviews. Okay. All right, so I'm just going to skim through some of these. I thought they were funny, and if you laugh, then if you want to laugh, go ahead. If you don't, sorry, I wasted your time. So hello, my name is Christopher Nolan. Welcome to Masterclass. Today I'll be discussing how to add emotional depth to my characters. First I add woman, then I add child, and we're done.
Sounds like him too.
Oh, that's funny.
Hilariously expensive, convoluted, and up its own ass. Like, so dumb. Loved every second of it. This was a fun one. We drove 2 hours from LA to San Diego to see Tenet, which is like, I love that people are just like taking COVID back to LA. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
We spent 75% of the trip home complaining about basically every aspect. It's a puzzle box with no reward or sense of satisfaction. Let's see. That's some other good ones. There's a lot of people in these reviews that like these people that said we rented a truck and drove to San Diego to see Tenet. The South Bay Drive-In, had a lovely time, went to the beach, saw a beautiful sunset, made a video, came home and watched 90 minutes. Like, what the fuck? This is just funny. This is a good one. So this person, their review was just, huh? And then in parentheses, they said, haha, get it? It's a palindrome.
Oh, cute.
I thought this was funny. This is funny. Easily Nolan's worst non-Batman movie since Insomnia or Following. I loved it. Nolan's worst movie, an absolutely insufferable, entirely incoherent stream of trite exposition and writing with absolutely no emotional core, nor even the most remote understanding of tone or storytelling structure. I know I should be talking about the movie in general, but let me just say how much I appreciated how hot this movie was. 6'3" Elizabeth Debicki, John, Robert, and Aaron, hot. The cinematography, hot. The score, hot. The set piece is hot. It's just hot. Tenet is hot. It's sexy. Someone tell Christopher Nolan that time, this is actually a really funny one. Someone tell Christopher Nolan that time will not sleep with him, no matter how many movies he makes about it. Nolan was so scared to flop, he designed a movie that you have to watch twice. Yeah, burn. Okay. Anyway, those were funny. Whatever.
Yeah. We watched it twice.
Yep. I watched it twice too. Did you feel like you got any more out of it the second time?
Nope.
Okay.
It's almost like The Sixth Sense. Like
there was clues, and then at the end you're like, oh, and then I went back and was like, okay, I see that, and I kind of see that, and
yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think I like picked up, like I recognized that something was supposed to be a meaningful moment. Mm-hmm. I didn't know why. Then after the end of the movie, you're like, okay, that's why. And I don't think I really picked up any new ones on the second watch. Granted, I was like baking and doing other stuff. So.
Okay. So let me just make sure I'm clear on this. So for the first round, you were on your phone watching Instagram videos. On the second round, you were baking.
I was watching Instagram videos the first time I watched this movie.
Well, Lena's face disagrees.
So. I don't think so. Maybe one.
Okay. Yeah, at least one.
Maybe one.
It probably because I called her out on it, she turned it on mute so that she couldn't hear the sound. On her
phone. I don't think so.
Anyways.
Okay.
So general thoughts on this movie. I feel like it's a lot. I think the opening scene, I think, was phenomenal. I really appreciated, like, everything about, there was, like, this first 8 minutes that I don't know if you guys watched it, but they actually previewed it, like, a couple days early where you could watch it on YouTube, and of course
we didn't watch it that way.
I did watch it that way because I was so excited, and I have a lot of thoughts on this movie. I'm going to be honest. I think the first thought that comes to mind that actually, like, I really struggled with how I wanted to phrase this, but I'm just going to come out and say it. I don't love John David Washington. Mm-hmm. And I feel that anyone else, literally any other actor in Hollywood that I could think of off the top of my head, could have done this role and been fine, probably been better. Mm-hmm. I think it's really fascinating because his father is like an exponentially better actor. Like his father is like such a phenomenal actor to me. And I don't see literally any appeal in this guy. Like the first time I watched it, that was my thought. And then the second time around, I was like, okay, I'm going to watch it for like specifically, I'm going to pay attention to his performance because there must be something about this guy that was like compelling enough for, you know, him to be cast and for him to especially like how he interacted with the other actors. And like the only conclusion I could come to is like this literally could have been anyone in this role.
Yeah. I will say I completely agree with you. And I think not that I feel bamboozled, but I feel like where I first saw him and really appreciated him was a role so specific to like him. It worked with his style. And I think was Black Klansman. And I think, you know, him kind of playing more of that dry, you know, unemotional kind of character and with like Spike Lee's direction, that really worked. It worked so well. And I think in this movie, Christopher Nolan kind of lets people breathe a lot more than I think Black Klansman did. And you can see the difference in like Robert Pattinson and how he is reacting. He's constantly acting. He's constantly doing something that makes you feel like that character is a real person. Where John David Washington is just kind of like, oh, you said your line. Now it's my turn to deliver my line.
Yeah.
And now it's my turn to deliver my line. And now it's my line. And it's just, there's no realism to it at all.
Is this the right word? But when I think of him,
I think catatonic. Just no emotion.
Yeah.
Like just dead. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, even in his eyes, it's just like there's no life in there.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any chemistry with anyone, like anyone. Like, no. This gorgeous.
Pattinson is so
good.
He's so good. And the actress, I'm blanking on her name, but like she's fucking stunning and gorgeous and she's a phenomenal actor. And I'm just thinking, like, oh, wow. Like, I felt bad for her having to compete in all of those scenes with him. And I'm just like, I don't know. There was just.
Branagh, like,
so he was great.
Yeah. He just didn't have chemistry with anyone.
Nobody.
And it was so disappointing because I don't know.
I will say I didn't like
filming this and didn't see that. Like, no, recast this guy. Don't finish the movie with this guy.
Totally.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that.
I didn't love Kenneth Branagh in this either.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I felt like.
I like him, though.
I do like him. And I don't love him. Mm-hmm. But I kind of feel like his performance was a little reminiscent of, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman in Mission Impossible 3, where it's just, like, that very, like, super dry and, like, calm sort of demeanor and not pulled off as well, you know? Mm. I didn't buy it as much, you know? And, like, him, like, when he started, like, hitting the guy with that, like, gold bar or plutonium bar or whatever, it's like, I don't buy you as this, like, tough guy. I don't know. I just didn't. Yeah. I don't know. It's funny,
Natalie, because I totally forgot that he was in Black Klansman, and I actually, like, I really loved that movie. And I actually really loved him in that movie now that I think about it. And so I kind of had just written him off from this as like I'm just not interested in him as an actor. But now that you say that movie, I'm like, oh, well, actually he was pretty good in that movie. So what happened here? Because I genuinely don't know. I personally didn't love Robert Pattinson in this either. And I think that I'm kind of alone in that assessment because a lot of people that I've talked to say that Robert Pattinson was like amazing in this. I really think that, and I'm going to butcher her name and I really do apologize, but Elizabeth Debicki, I want to say is her name is. I just thought she was so phenomenal. I thought that she stole this entire film. Like, her performance was stunning. She's gorgeous. She is stunning to look at. She is captivating on screen. Every scene that she was in, I was completely enamored. And I think she's a phenomenal actor. Like, I really enjoyed her performance. But she's really the only person that stood out in this to me. And again, to your point, there were a lot of, you know, really talented actors in this. Kenneth Branagh, Robert Pattinson, who's going to be the new Batman. Like, I don't know. From an acting perspective, she was the only one that really captured me.
Well, the role was written for her.
Oh, was it? Oh,
really?
Mm-hmm. And she said that she wanted to audition because she wanted to feel like she deserved the role, not just to be given it. And they were like, yeah, you got it.
You're like, don't worry about it. You're fine.
Yeah, like you can audition, but you got it.
Yeah. I think it would have been really interesting if those roles were reversed between Robert Pattinson and John David Washington.
Yes.
And I think,
although
it's seeing like what his chemistry would have been like with Kenneth Branagh, with her, like, I think that would have been a more interesting movie to me, you know?
I just kept thinking the whole time, knowing who his father was, I kept thinking what a remarkable performance it may have been if Denzel Washington was actually like the lead in this film.
Oh, because yeah. It was Denzel 20, 30 years ago.
I don't even think so.
Stunning performance.
I don't even think it needed to be him 20, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it could have been him today because the character was timeless essentially, right? Because he...
And not to do those fight scenes. You think Denzel could take a punch and roll around like that?
Yeah, no, I think it would have been fine. Mm-hmm. We'll use the stunt double.
No.
So I think that there's actually a lot of flaws with this film, and we could talk about those, you know, for forever. But I think not the least of which the flaws, I think, would be, you know, the complicated and confusing story, which I think everyone is pretty much in consensus of. But I think my argument...
That makes me feel so much better because I was like, I know I'm a dumb, but this is... I don't get it.
Well, what I want to say about that, though, is that I think that... all of Nolan's films are complicated and confusing if you really think about it. And I think that you almost have to like bake that into your review or your assessment, because when I think about a film like Inception, when I think about a film like Interstellar, which I loved, and I actually watched Interstellar a few days before this because I wanted to kind of like get in that Nolan mind frame or whatever. But he does a lot of work with the idea of time, right? Like he, mm-hmm. you know, he plays with time and how we as human beings perceive time. And I think there's something really interesting there. And it's one of those things where it's like, I think kind of the purpose of that and the point of it is that like, we're not really meant to understand it because it's esoteric and it's not necessary. And I don't want to get like too philosophical or whatever, but like it's time. It's subjective to so many people. And, you know, you could, and I think the best analogy I've ever heard about, you know, how time is subjective is if you've ever been in pain, you know, an hour can feel like an eternity, but if you've been on vacation, you know, it goes by really quickly. And so that, but it was passing at the same rate for everyone. Right. And so the way that Christopher Nolan has this like obsession with time and how he interprets it and how we interpret it as humans, I think there's some really cool stuff there. And I really do enjoy that, even if it's confusing to me at times. And I wanted to kind of ask you guys what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I think one of
my like movies I always think about, and I haven't watched it in a long time, but like Memento. Yeah. I remember when I watched that movie, I was like, I'm blown away what I just watched. Like, it's just like, what is this? And Inception is like one of my, I wouldn't say favorite, but one of my all time, like, I really like this movie and I can watch it anytime that it's on because I love that it made me think about this and they're in this time and then that time and they're going into this brain and that brain. Like, it's just like, it's crazy. Like if that stuff could happen. And I think I just kind of think about stuff like that all the time. Like, it, you know, how many lives have we all lived? What soul is it now? Like, have we been here before? Is this, what do they call those? A simulation. And like, we've done this before and now we're doing it again. Like, I don't know. It's just like all those kinds of things are just like super trippy.
You think about it. You think about it all the time.
In time, out of time, during the time. But I mean, so this movie, I'm glad I went back and watched it again. Cause then I was like thinking certain things and I was like, okay, it's Christopher Nolan. And I don't think this is like a prequel or sequel, but is it something to do with Inception? Like before, because it's World War III, like, and then I don't know. It's like, just, it kind of was super similar in like how they like went back and forth, but, and how they jumped into like certain things. I don't know. I think Robert Pattinson, I mean, I thought he was great, but I'm a huge Robert Pattinson fan and I like seeing him be recognized for a good actor that he is. And he's not great, I guess, in this, but I like that he's doing something different. He's being in these bigger movies. He's going to be Batman. Like, it's interesting where he's going in his career and, you know, being made fun of for Twilight and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But he actually turns out he's a really good actor. But I guess the trippy thing about the time back and forth is like, I liked that at one point, JDW, whatever this guy's name is.
The protagonist.
Yeah. He just, you know, obviously at some point he's going to like kill himself. And then it's like the guy says when he wakes up, welcome to the afterlife. So then it's like, this company that they all work for, is this when he's getting recruited? Now he's, because they talk about who recruits who at the end. And at one point, Robert even says, oh, in between the time I switched back. So I thought you were inverted. No, in between I went back. So it's like, he's going back and forth in that little twirly thing and that they're guarding or something, right? Like they twirl in the thing and they come back out and then they go back in and
the twirly thing. I love it.
I don't know how to explain it, but the little twirly, like, you know, what are those revolving door things? And I feel like that's kind of where the time, like you go into that way and then you come out in the time that you want to come out.
Some may call it a time machine.
I don't think it's a time machine, but then it's interesting too, the gas masks. So is it that they're wearing these gas masks because in certain times they can't breathe that air? So like then you can kind of tell when they're in certain times because they're wearing the masks.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have a lot of thoughts and I don't even know where the thoughts are going.
I think it fits perfectly for this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like this episode needs to be all over the place because let's be honest, that's what the movie was.
Yeah, there's no answers. I don't think this has an answer to it. So I think
I was really
think about it. I think that's their answer.
I was really trying to like break things down and understand. And I gave up at a certain point. And I was just like, I'm just really going to just rest my brain and enjoy the visuals. And call it a day.
It was great visually. And I loved the sound.
It was great visually. I love the sound. My perspective on this, and I'm going to try to sum it up as succinctly as possible. I think that this movie lacked the heart and the soul of Interstellar and even Inception to some extent. Sorry, it's the cocktail. I feel like the characters felt a little more hollow than normal and I didn't really care about any of them. And I think that that was kind of my main issue with the movie. I think that Nolan movies are about the spectacle and the questions that it asks you to reflect on, I think at the end of the day, right? And so by that measurement, for me, this was a success. I think about the scene with the plane. I think about the shots in Italy on the water. And I just think A+, like cinematography, production value, like A++. Ultimately for me, I had a certain expectation going into this film being a Christopher Nolan movie, you know, the film of 2020, as it were. And then I read the reviews when it came out. I read the reviews that weren't going to spoil it. I kind of just wanted like a general consensus of what people thought. And so I think, to be quite candid, I think that kind of lowered the bar for me a bit because people seem to be very mixed and even indifferent to this movie. And so I think based on that, this film kind of was exactly what I was expected it to be. And it was what I wanted it to be. It was a clusterfuck. It was confusing. It was a Christopher Nolan movie about time and how time doesn't make sense. And so why would a movie about time make sense? And that's kind of how I have my own, you know, thoughts about what was going on and, you know, what the ending meant and, you know, the sequence of the scenes and all of those things. But ultimately, I just think that this is one of those movies, and I think it's much like Interstellar, where it's like your interpretation of it and your personal experience of this movie is going to be for you. And so that is my takeaway.
I think you brought up a really good point as far as like the emotional connection with these characters being very lacking in this movie. And I think that you can, you know, justify like Interstellar and some of these other movies as like far as like maybe not understanding or like time is an element that we don't understand and can't understand and blah, 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 blah. But you still feel a connection because there's still a baseline story of, you know, Matthew McConaughey's, you know, his character's relationship and like wanting to be with his daughter and that whole story and who she is and, you know, her journey. And there was no connection with our main character. Like there was nobody that he was, I feel like, doing this for, had a relationship with that was meaningful. Well, I think they tried to kind of force that there was maybe something there or some sympathy or whatever for the wife. But I mean, that wasn't like a relationship that was built over time. I think the most meaningful thing was him and Robert Pattinson's character at the end, but it's like, well, now the movie's over. Like, I see all those hints that you dropped along the way that this is where this relationship actually was, but maybe had I been tied to these two people together in their history, maybe that would have been a more meaningful journey for me to be with them, you know?
So I would actually argue that, and I think this is probably where the biggest miss, like in all the flaws that we could talk about in this movie, I think the biggest flaw for me, the biggest miss for me is that none of these characters had, like, they're going back and forth in time, right? That's kind of like the theory of this film. And we don't care enough about either the characters or any of their relationships or attachments in such a way that it matters where they are in time.
Yeah.
And I think from my perspective, the only relationship that really they wanted you to care about in this movie was this woman's relationship with her son. Mm-hmm. And she kept talking about her son and how she was doing everything for her son and she could not be with her son. Well, we never met the son.
We never saw them together.
And so I don't care at that point. Like, I'm not invested because it doesn't matter, right? Like, I don't, like, oh, but that's cool. But like, if something happens to you, I don't have the vantage point from your son's perspective that I'm going to care about your death or...
Yeah, well, if he didn't like you, I like
the dad better.
Totally. And so I just think that like there were misses in terms of like the character development in ways that Inception, to your point, Natalie, like Inception, like you could tell like the daughter was aching for her father to be home. And you could tell that Matthew McConaughey mm-hmm. missed his life back on Earth. And he was doing everything he possibly could to try to save that life and save the people that he missed. And you didn't really understand like, what is it all for? It was kind of like the whole, like everybody in this movie is pretty awful. And so it's like, well, okay, if the world ends, cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're only showing you kind of like the worst of humanity. I don't know. I think from a character development perspective, I think this is probably Nolan's worst because there was no, I didn't care about anyone in this movie, literally. And so when it ended, I was like, okay, well, you know, to your point about, you know, the two leads, I'm like, well, yeah, they formed a bond and that bond looks like it's coming to an end now, or maybe it's just beginning, depending on where we are in time.
I think Christopher Nolan was like riding on that line of like her saying, if he can't have me, nobody can have me. And so the world ends. And I think he was wanting it to be as impactful as the Dark Knight line of some people just want to watch the world burn, which that explained the Joker and who that character was in that movie so fucking well and was like powerful and like made so much sense. This didn't make any sense. You know, like it just wasn't as like, I felt like he was just tying everything up to like that moment and that line. And it's like, it just doesn't work as well. It really doesn't.
Yeah. I think for me, again, this movie, like most Nolan films, was about time and how we interpret it, what it means. Mm-hmm. I think there's a fascinating, you know, discussion somewhere in there. And I love how Nolan is always challenging us to think about our interpretation of time. And I think, again, for me, as somebody that like thinks about those things and finds that really compelling, I loved that aspect of it. And so that, even though none of the questions are really answered, I really appreciate that about it. And so for me, that was almost enough.
Yeah, I'm definitely a Nolan fan and I like how he, you know, plays with time and your mind and all that. I wasn't a big Interstellar fan and, you know, I don't know, like, I can't speak to that, but like for this one, it's just like, yeah, is this going to be a movie that I need to watch again? Not really.
Yeah.
Dark Knight, all that. Yeah, I watch it all the time. Inception, I watch it pretty frequently. Like, I want to go back and watch Memento. Like, those movies I think about all the time. This one isn't going to make me think about it again.
Interesting.
And I do want to say for, like, some of the sound design, I just really did not enjoy some of the choices he made. And it's like, I know we're trying to kind of create this world of, like, the inverse, and you could tell when he's having people do the inverse movements naturally, and like some of the fight sequences where it's like they're kind of making the noises themselves of what the fight motions should be, that felt really weird. Just like, you know, I don't know, it just felt a little ridiculous. Then some of the punches and the like fighting landed so loud, like so much louder than the dialogue, that it just like, I don't understand what I'm watching here. It just, I didn't like it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think obviously the biggest, so some, I had read enough reviews that said you should turn on the subtitles when you watch this movie. And so I had done that. And if you haven't watched this movie with subtitles, I do recommend going back and doing it because you obviously catch more of the dialogue. Yeah. I don't understand how a movie of this caliber with this budget has such poorly mixed dialogue. I'm literally confounded by that. And the only thing I can think is that it was intentional. And if it was intentional, I have no idea why that would have been intentional. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the dialogue was mixed, was a miss. But you know, it is what it is, and so you get over that. It's a lot.
It's tough. Again, it's one of those things where it's like I say, like, if you notice certain things, like sounds or like fight motions or light, that like you're like, what is that light source coming from? Like, what is that's incorrect. That is should not be happening. The whole point is like you should be fully immersed into the movie.
Yeah.
And you should be paying attention to the little details of like, oh, why was that? Why are the punches so fucking loud? And then I can't hear what he's saying a minute later. Like, it just doesn't make it, like, it felt so unnatural. Like, it was just weird, especially like in that kitchen fight. I was like, what is happening in here? Why is it so goddamn loud?
I mean, I do think there's something to be said for like dynamic range in a film like this, mm-hmm. because you have, you know, a vastly different experience between like the quiet moments of dialogue that you are completely inaudible, right? And then it goes to this like completely loud scene in the next scene. And I have issue with that, because like my biggest issue with a film is when there's like a normal scene and then they immediately are like in a club in the next scene. Mm-hmm. And like, mm-hmm. it's like, what the fuck are you doing to my sound system? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I can't hear anything.
Exactly. I'm not a fan of that.
I don't know. Maybe that's more of like, they didn't have any like soundtrack going through a lot of the fight scenes, and that I didn't go back and like pay attention to, but it's like, am I only hearing the sound design of the fight and no other, maybe like one little, Alina does the sound of the movie pretty well, but like, you know, like, is that the only sound going on other than the like, you know, like,
it definitely wasn't that sound. It was like,
I mean, I found myself asking, like, is this, am I listening to like the Dolby audio, like, you know, AMC opening IMAX
trailer? Yeah, exactly.
No, am I listening to like the mix that was meant for like the IMAX screen?
But that's like the Nolan sound, right? Like, that's his like thing.
Versus like what I'm sure they remix things for the home theater experience, right? And so like, again, I had watched Inception a few days prior to this, and it definitely had some like dynamic range to it, but it wasn't like, you know, I wasn't turning the volume up and down throughout the whole film because it was so inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And so I just felt like they didn't like remix the audio for the home theater, which is super annoying. Yeah. But
my neighbor complained. I just have to say that.
Interesting.
So
I'll take responsibility for that. I'm sorry.
They did not enjoy how loud and the bass of this movie. Was quite significant for them.
She was like, if it doesn't stop by a certain time, I'm going to go say something.
Just tell her you're doing your homework for the podcast. It's fine.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And she didn't care.
That's amazing. That's amazing. All right. We ready to score this one? I think this has been like a 12-hour episode of the Martini Scale.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, it's perfect time.
Right? Exactly. Is it 12 hours? Or
is it 12 hours or has it been 20 minutes?
Time does not exist.
Yeah.
Lena, why don't you go first? What was your score on this?
I think we should release this episode in reverse.
Let's release it yesterday.
Perfect. Yes. I'm going to have to go because I'm still, I don't know. I'm at a 3, I guess. I mean, it's Christopher Nolan. I have expectations for him. He meets some of the expectations with what he did in this. Is it a 1? Definitely not. Is it a 2? Because I probably don't want to or need to watch this movie again. But did I enjoy it? Somewhat.
Okay. Interesting. Natalie.
And I think, again, bringing up Christopher Nolan, I think I need to lower my expectations of what I think he can accomplish as far as actors, because he allowed Christian Bale to do that Batman voice. Batman. So I shouldn't have high expectations for him getting the best acting out of
it. I don't think he cares about that.
I feel like he doesn't care. So as far as his level of like cinematography and all of that, what he brings to it, that was great. But story and everything else for me and acting was so subpar from what I wanted. This is a 3.
Interesting. All right. Well, like I said, I think the bar was lowered for me because I had done my research for this. And I think as far as Nolan movies go, for me, again, they're about the spectacle and the questions that it asks you to reflect on. And so by that measurement, this was a success for me. It doesn't live in the Interstellar world for me at all, which is like Interstellar is like a one. Like it's a top notch movie that is perfection. But this is really just a notch below that. So I'm going to give it a two martini.
Okay. If you were going to give it a one, I was going to talk in my Batman voice for the rest of the podcast.
Oh, wow. Well, thank God we're toward the end of the podcast then.
I know.
Okay, that's unfortunate for you. As always, we want to thank you for listening. For more information, please be sure to visit themartiniscale.com, where you can find links for all of our social channels in addition to show notes and more.
If you haven't already, please head over to Apple Podcast and rate and review us. It helps others discover the show.
We'll see you next time.
Cheers! Bye!